first I was aware of you was on Father Knows Best, but I know you made some feature films, too. Do you want to tell me how you started?
Yeah, my mother was an actress, did Johnny McBrown and Bob Steele Westerns, and so her agent sent me out on interviews when I was about six, and I just started getting bit parts and, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, her name wasn't Virginia Gray, so what was her name?
No, Beatrice Gray.
Oh.
Yeah. But her career started to ebb about the time I was born. She, in fact, she had a she was in New Faces of 1938 with a couple of really big ones that went on, Ann Miller and somebody else, I've forgotten who, and she was under contract at Warner Brothers to Hughes, not Warner Brothers, but RKO to Hughes, and then she got pregnant with me, she couldn't go on the tour to promote the picture and herself, and got dropped from the contract, and it was, that was kind of the end of her scene.
Was your dad a professional?
No, he was in aircraft maintenance.
It was her idea, then, to put you in movies.
Well, actually, it was my, it was the agent's idea, really. It, she hadn't really given it too much thought, but I was a precocious youngster, and it seemed like it was sensible.
Can you remember your first part?
Yeah, very vaguely. It was a thing called Our Old Car. And then it was about somebody coming back from the war, father coming back from the war, and then having to deal with this car that I guess it was a big deal after the war about cars. I don't really remember too much about it, though. I was about six, I guess.
Did you have a contract with any of the major studios?
Yeah, I was in a contract to Warner Brothers for a time, and 20th Century Fox for a year or two. I think that was all.
When you started Father Knows Best, was it also a radio series? Because I think it began on radio.
Yeah, I did. They had years and years of radio, but they didn't continue on with any of the people in the radio show except for Young. They recast it all, and I'd never even heard of the radio show, so I didn't know much about it.
Were you on the first Father Knows Best television?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they like I say, they recast the whole thing, and They were going to try and use scripts from the radio show. They had whole bunches of scripts, you know, you can imagine, that they thought they'd be able to just whip right into television scripts, but they weren't able to. And so they had to start really from scratch on the whole shooting match. And I did a couple of interviews, I think, then came to a test, and then they told me I was going to do it. I didn't really, it was just a, just a neat job interview to me. I mean, I'd been acting for 10 years before I got that. So I was really not expecting it to turn into 6 years of steady work.
Did it seem like a success from the beginning?
Well, as far as the quality of the show is concerned, it did, from my point of view. But it wasn't a commercial success immediately. They were in the wrong time slot, as I recall. They were on it late at night. I think it was 10 o'clock with Kent Cigarettes, and it didn't last long there. I'd forgotten just exactly what happened, but they were dropped for a time. And then there was a big mail-in kind of thing, keep it on, that type of shot. And I think they got Scott toilet paper and a new time slot. And then from then on, it was gangbusters.
How long were you on these series altogether?
They were in production for 6 years, and it would have gone on except for the actor's strike. Rodney decided that at that point it would be just as probably more profitable to quit than go on. He could get a good price for the reruns, and that's what he did.
Within a few years, you were old enough, you know, to understand, I suppose, what you were doing, what the shows were about. Did they seem real to you?
No, it was an embarrassment to me right from the beginning. Not even it was an acting show, a significant one, because I disagreed with almost everything about the whole show as far as what it purported to be or what it tried to represent, and I mean everything about it I thought was just really full of blank.
Did you ever voice that to the producers or director?
Yeah, but I was professional, you know. I mean, it didn't. I just, after a while, I started, when the significance of what I was doing began to come upon me, I started feeling a little guilty about it, but that was later on in the thing. I didn't, in fact, even, it wasn't until after the show that I really felt responsible for creating a situation that that I wouldn't be able to defend. And I think, as an actor, there's a responsibility to what you portray, and people learn by instruction, by imitation, and by example. And the kind of example that I was, I wouldn't want anybody to follow it. You know,
you may be surprised, maybe you wouldn't, at that. You know, at how much that show influenced a lot of people who, you know, who were about your age at the time. I was talking to some people who are now in their about 22, 23, and I wasn't that familiar with Father Knows Best. I've seen it, of course, but I didn't know really what the characters or the situations were all about. And they were telling me how much that show and Donna Reed's show had influenced their feelings about relationships, particularly marital relationships, and how very false they were, and how much they've been screwed up because of it.
Yeah, well, that's the kind of thing I was talking about. I didn't realize that too. I never did know until much later how popular the show was. Fan mail was kept from me, so that I didn't have any idea how popular it was, and I made no personal appearances or anything like that. So it wasn't until years afterwards that I realized how significant a part it had played in so many people's lives. I mean, really. I mean, I can't go out in the street now, people recognize me, and they say, "You're Bud. I watch it every day, right now." I mean, this is right now. This happens all the time. It's 18 years later, you know. So I don't know. I feel responsible. I feel guilty to a degree for having had a part in that, because it really wasn't, like your friends mentioned, it wasn't a constructive example at all of family life.
Do you think the other members of the cast liked what they were doing and felt it was for real?
I don't think they really thought about it very much. I know Young is motivated by the money, and Jane just likes to work, and Eleanor she was really just crying most of the time, so there wasn't really much she could think about. And little Lauren was the tragedy of the whole thing. And she had her problems with an alcoholic mother, and we don't even want to go into what her father was into. But I don't think they had, you know, too much time to think about too much of anything.
What kind of relationships did you and the other members of the cast have among themselves?
Very professional. I just wanted to do my work and go home, and everybody else wanted to pretty much do the same thing.
Isn't it kind of hard, though, working, about 5 days a week for 6 years?
Very hard. It was 6 days a week, and it was 12 and 14 hours a day a lot of times, too. Not being paid overtime and being underage, working overtime illegally and not being paid for it, you know, things like that. It was very difficult and real hard work. And the only thing that made it really good was we had a really dynamite director who inspired everybody by his genius, Peter Tewksbury. He really kept the whole thing together.
Were you in professional children's school at the time?
Well, the studio school, which is a total joke. I still don't know how to read and write, or any of the other, you know, no biology, no chemistry, no anything of that nature. So that was just acquiesce to the laws, but that was it. It wasn't anything else. It was just, in fact, I had the answers to the tests when I went down to the Board of Education. You know, it was really a total farce.
Isn't there anybody that checks on that kind of thing, including your mother?
Well, my mother, I was kind of precocious, and I didn't really care about it too much, and my mother didn't think that it was that important either. The person who should have been on the ball was an employee of the studios, so you can't expect her. This was a teacher, a resident teacher there. She was not really making it happen the way it ought to happen, because the production schedule would have been interfered with, and that's happened to most child actors, I think, that work steadily at any, you know, for any length of time. Their education was just almost nil.
What kind of friends did you have? Were some of them out of the business, buddies and girlfriends at the time?
Yeah, I had a few buddies that weren't in the business. Of course, Dean Stockwell and Bobby Driscoll were both real good friends of mine during that time. But mostly it was just a few people, because I didn't have much time. I was working all day long, and I had to go home and then study the script for the next day's work, so there really wasn't much time for anything, social activities to speak of.
I'm surprised about how many people ask me about Bobby Driscoll, who they don't know he's dead. That wasn't very well publicized.
No, it wasn't. In fact, years went by before I knew he was dead. In fact, it was all our friends. We never did really know. We heard stories, and he was a fugitive for a while, and so he was on the run, and so it was kind of... you didn't know whether he was just hiding out and not getting in touch with anybody, or if he was actually dead, or what. You know, it wasn't until just a couple of years ago that I found out for sure that he actually was dead.
What was he a fugitive from? Was it a drug charge?
I don't know exactly what the charge was. I'm not sure. I think he might have been violated on probation or something like that, or. I don't know exactly what the specific charge was, but he was wanted and chose not to turn himself in. I think what probably would have happened was he would have turned himself in, and he would have done it a year, and then he would have had a tail, which is like some probation or parole or something like that. And I don't think he felt that he could handle his parole. He did have a drug problem. He had an incredible... metabolism. He could just handle vast amounts of everything, and didn't seem to bother him. You know, it didn't seem to, kill him like it would an ordinary person. He just could swallow anything, evidently. Well, not quite anything. I understand that's the way he got it. I'm not really sure how he got it, though.
Well, there was an article in one of the scandal sheets, something like National Enquirer, I think it was, short interview with his mother, which is how I found out he was dead. Saying that I think the body had been found in the tenement, an abandoned tenement, and it had been there for quite a while, and she said she wanted the public to know that he was off drugs when he died. He simply died of, I don't know, malnutrition, I think.
Well, that's possible. But knowing Bob, it's kind of unlikely. I mean, he was really into some narcotics.
Do you think it was his career that bothered him?
Well, it was his mother, I think. I remember stories he told about being locked in a closet when he was, didn't say his lines right or something like that, for a day. He'd be locked in a dark... his mother was a mess, and he had a really rough time. And he didn't like being small. I think being small bothered him a lot. And he had a, heavy personal... a lot of personal problems, but I think it was primarily his family life that made him. And he liked to, he had quite a mind, and he liked to experiment and expand his horizons as far as different sorts of experience are concerned. But mainly, I think he just wanted to really get away from everything, just retreat, total escape.
Have you ever regretted becoming an actor so young in life?
No, I haven't. In fact, I'm about the only child actor that I think is grooved by the whole thing. I'm delighted. I think it made me grow up a lot earlier than I would have ordinarily. I mean, I was dealing in mature situations, adult situations from the time I was six, so I look at it as quite an advantage. I mean, I had my it's kind of reversed. I can have a childhood now, where I had an adulthood before, and so it's delightful.
Were you able to evaluate parts when you were very young? I mean, were there ones you wanted and ones you didn't want?
No, when I was young, I just took anything. I didn't really have any no particular evaluation of what I was doing. If they paid the money, I did the part. That was all there was to that.
Were you aware of how much money you were making and what was happening to it?
Yeah, I was aware. I was very aware. As a matter of fact, When I got to Father Knows Best, I'd gotten my salary up to $500 a week, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it was a lot to me at the time. I wasn't a big child star either. You know, I wasn't a Bobby Driscoll or a Dean Stockwell. So that really represented something to me, because I'd done it over bits and, you know, small featured parts and things like that. No starring roles at all. So I'd gotten my salary up to $500 a week, and I don't know if I'll go into it or not, but anyway, Father Knows Best to cut me in half, and I was very aware of that. Ended up getting $250 a week by some trickery.
Even $500 a week to me doesn't sound very much when you're working that hard and when someone or some people are making an awful lot of money from that series.
Yeah, it started to gnaw on me a little bit, too. And the fact that usually when you're in a successful show, they revamp the contracts. It was even kind of a standard procedure way back then. You know, if you get picked up for a couple of years, they rewrite everything. Well, it wasn't the way it went in our situation. They may have dealt with everyone individually and told everybody to keep quiet about it or something. But I don't know. My agent just never went after it. I had to eventually go after it myself. I never did really get sufficiently compensated on the thing. You know, it was before residuals, too, so I had a standard residual deal, which amounts to, I think in total it was about $40,000 or something like that.
When did you get to the point when you started hearing about parts that you wanted?
Oh, well, when I was doing the show, as a matter of fact, the part came up. There was out at Warner Brothers, Nick Ray and... some people wanted me to do a part in the Jimmy Dean movie. What was the one with Sal Mineo and
Rebel Without a Cause?
Rebel Without a Cause. They wanted me to do that. I had wardrobe fittings and it was all set to go on it in the Sal Mineo role. And I was very excited about that. And we were on a hiatus, off period, and. Some reason or other, somebody's availability was curtailed for a time, and put their shooting schedule ahead back 2 weeks, and I interrupted with my shooting schedule on Father Knows Best, and I couldn't prevail upon the producers, Rodney and Young, to write me out for a couple of weeks, or postpone theirs, or shoot around me, or do something. I couldn't get it done. So I didn't get that part, and couldn't do it, and that bothered me a lot, because I was 15, 16, I guess I was about 16, almost 17, so I was beginning to know, what I wanted to do as an actor, and that would have, I really did want to do that, and didn't get to do it.
Can you bring yourself now to watch the reruns of Father Knows Best?
Yeah, I do from time to time. I have another reason for doing it. Involved in a project that deals with the whole Father Knows Best syndrome, and so I'm acquainting myself with it from whenever I get a chance, 4:30 or 5:30, I forget when it's on.
What were you faced with when the show went off the air? Was it difficult getting parts, or did it help you?
Well, I didn't have too much trouble getting parts like Bud Anderson. But that isn't exactly what I wanted to do. In fact, I turned down a lot of stuff that was similar. I took a couple of things, very few. I think I worked 3 or 4 times, and then when I got busted, I couldn't get a job. Then I couldn't buy a job. Then so I didn't have that. Didn't have the problem of having to turn down jobs.
What year was that?
Let's see. Gosh, I don't even know.
I'm guessing about 67.
Oh no, it was way before that. Way before that. It must have been 60. Must have been 60 or 50, 60, I guess.
Were you still on the show, on the series?
No, it was just about a year after it was off the series.
Did you ever hear from any of the people on the show about the bust when it happened? Did anyone call up and say, can I help you, or
no.
Shame on you? Or?
No, one person, Johnny Panogis, the prop man, who was my real... was a buddy on the show. In fact, he was about the closest relation I had. I mean, closest kind of relationship I had was with him. He came down to the trial, and ran a screen for me on the way out, you know, ran a block for me so I could dodge the cameras and everything like that. He was right there. No, I never heard word one from anybody on the thing. I'm sure they wanted to get as far away from it as they could.
What was the outcome? Were you fined or probation?
Yeah, no, I wasn't fined. I was sentenced to 1 to 10 with the suspended that and then given 90 days in county, 90 days jail time. So I did that and then had 3 years probation or parole after that.
How do you think that affected your career immediately when you got out?
Oh, well, I was total cease and desist. I just couldn't get a job. You know, there was no career then.
I don't think we said what you were busted for. It was grass, wasn't it?
Yeah.
How much grass did you have?
There was seeds and stems. There was a little packet of what would be a lid nowadays. There wasn't even any grass in it. It was all... I was taking it out. I had these seeds, and I just didn't want to throw them away. I wanted to give them to a friend of mine out in Topanga so he could grow some, and I had them in the car, and I drove out and then forgot to give them to him and just forgot about them in the car. They must have been there for 2-3 months. I needed to see the car. And that's what they found, and that was the extent of it.
Had you been smoking grass very long at the time?
Well, yeah, I'd been smoking since before I got the show. I was 15. I started smoking grass when I was 15.
How about the other people in the business when you ran into them in agents' offices and commissaries and so forth? Did they bring the matter up?
No, nobody ever brought it up. In fact, when I started to get jobs, or when I started to try and get jobs, I couldn't understand why I couldn't make any headway. You know, I mean, I knew I was a good actor, and everybody knew I was a good actor. That's what everybody always. God, you're such a good actor. Why aren't you working? You know, I said, yeah, I've heard that a lot. You know, and. And so I really could never get any explanation of it. If I'd put it to a lot of people, you know, and nobody would ever say one word about it. I did finally get some definite evidence of what was going on from a friend of mine who had become an agent at MCA. He just started out, you know, as a, you know, how they used to start him out in the mailroom at MCA, and he'd gotten to the point where he'd gotten upstairs a little bit, I guess. And he found out that, well, I did do a pilot out at Universal. This was several years after the bust. And I it was with Audrey Meadows or Jane Meadows, I forget which, and a comedies thing. And it came down from the network, I think it was, that if they did pick up the show, if they went with a show, that it would have to be without me because of the morals aspect of the thing, the fact that I'd been busted for narcotics. And I got that from, at that time, Universal and MCA were inseparable, and so it was nitty gritty stuff. It was good information. So that was the only evidence that I ever had, you know, concrete that there was I was on some sort of blacklist or not really desirable personage. But other than that, I could never get. I even had trouble getting agents. I'd get an agent, they'd say, oh, sure, you know, and then they would never send me out on anything, you know. I said, what the hell's going on? Is nobody working, you know? There's no interviews, nobody's even trying to get work or what? And they wouldn't say that they were running into resistance from the dope thing, but they just would rather not, you know, get into the whole subject. Actually, one guy, Wally Hiller, when I got busted, he was quite frank. He was my agent at the time. I'd left MCA and I went with Wally when he left MCA. And when I got busted, he said that he couldn't do it. He couldn't work for me because he didn't feel like he would want to represent me. So he was pretty straightforward about it. But that was the only one. That was, and he didn't even say that that it was his own personal thing. He just didn't think he could do a job for me, you know, and would rather not be associated with me because it might, you know, reflect poorly on him.
Did you ever watch Father Knows Best while you were in jail?
I don't recall now. I think not. I think that. Where we were, the only place I would have seen it was in maximum security. They had televisions, but in the bungalows, I later got it. It was like a ranch, it was like a farm. In fact, it was the best couple of months I ever spent. I came out weighing 142 pounds, more than I'd ever weighed. I had three squares a day. First time in my life I'd ever had three square meals a day. And laid around, got suntanned. And it was just like a country club. So I really didn't mind that part. But the only thing I didn't have was television. If television is a swimming pool, I didn't have a swimming pool either. But it wasn't so bad.
The other inmates in jail relate to you. Did they know who you were?
Yeah. Actually, there was... I ran into one kind of deal where I had to, get tough with somebody, or somebody wanted to get tough with me. I forget what it was exactly. But I think I only got into one physical scrape. Most everybody was pretty cool. There was some precedence at this place that I was Wayside Honor Rancho, and there was a place that Robert Mitchum had done time behind his grass bust. And so they were. I was just another celeb that got caught. So it was okay.
What would you say is the state of your career now? Do you have an agent?
As a matter of fact, I'm back with Wally Hiller. Strangely enough.
Well, now your type is in.
Yeah, right. Yeah, timing's a little better now. I've got a very grand scheme going, and some kind of interesting backing in it too. Jack Nicholson wants to produce this. This movie that me and another guy wrote. We haven't got the screenplay, but we got a treatment and story idea and all that. And we're looking for a writer now. It's called Billy Gray for President, and it's not going to, come out. It's going to be after the election and all that to avoid, and the whole big simus there. But it revolves around the Bud Anderson image as purportedly being the perfect young American, the person who you could really trust, and know that he was raised right and all that kind of stuff like that. And there's some switches and some things happen in it that are kind of interesting. But it's all based on the idea or the concept of that the voting will be done by picture instead of just by name. When you go in to choose your candidate, you see a picture of the person you're voting for, instead of just their name written down. And the significance of that is found out at a later time, before they know how, what sort of difference that's going to make. They institute it. This is in the script. They institute this type of voting. And then find out that a picture does an awful lot by itself, unrelated. It's discovered then that a picture has an importance all its own that transcends even what might be known about a person intellectually or read about him or in print or something like that. That the picture has a strength, a carrying strength of its own that goes back to like a conditioned response and the number of times of exposure that you've had in a favorable and a positive light would necessitate your voting along those lines. So in other words, if you were looking at two pictures and one you were totally familiar with by millions of exposures or hundreds of thousands of exposures, that you almost couldn't not vote for that person. It's the old thing of, if you say it often enough, the housewife reaches up and grabs Tide because Tide's been drummed into her head, and that's the kind of thing that we're approaching in reality. I mean, this is we take it in the script. We take it to a point of ridiculousness, but it's a good indication of where we are in terms of our electoral politics, I think, now, and that's what it's intended to comment on.
In the past 10 years since it all hit the fan, have you run into Jane Wyatt or Robert Young?
Yes, I have seen Jane Wyatt and Bob both. Jane, I get along with pretty well. I like her as a person, except that she's Catholic, and it's hard to deal with Catholics. I was brought up a Catholic, and not really very seriously, but I had enough exposure to it to know what a sad state of affairs it really is, and it's difficult for any Catholic to have an open mind and to be a reasonable, rational person, I feel. So. Except for that, we get along great.
How about Bob Young?
Well, we don't get along so great. He's a very professional guy and easy to work with, and always knew his knows his lines and everything like that. But there's an element of chilliness about him that it's hard to get over. Plus the fact that I felt that I was I felt wronged by him and contractually. I felt that I was done dirty, and he has a way of letting his producer take care of all that, but he shares in the profits, but he doesn't take the responsibility. And I just think he's a weak man, and really, I mean, anybody that would give their wife the power of attorney, there's something wrong with him.
I would think maybe he'd be a little bit, you know, more tolerant of your arrest. I understand he will take an occasional cocktail.
Yeah, well, he's got his own problems, you know. I mean, the AA thing and all that. You know, I mean, I don't want to indict the fellow. I mean, anybody who has, you know, had their own problems, there's got to be something to them. You know, there's got to be more to them than what appears. You know, he appears to me just to be really a kind of a cold fish. Now, maybe there's more to it than that. I got to give him the benefit of the doubt, but. As far as him being sympathetic to me, I don't for a minute have any illusions about that.
Well, if they want to know the end of the end, I shouldn't say the end. If they want to know the present state of the Billy Gray story, I would say he lives in a very pretty house on a mountain side of a mountain in Topanga Canyon, and I'd surely like to live here. So. Whatever the moral to that is, you look like you're having kind of a nice life.
Yeah, I am. As a matter of fact, the last couple of years, last two, 3 years, I've been getting into something that really takes care of all my needs, and that's the speedway racing. I've been doing it pretty successfully now for the last couple of years, and I just can't think of anything I'd rather do, and I've really found my niche.
Okay, that's sort of what I came for. I've been talking today with Billy Gray in his home, which is very pretty, and it's, as I say, on the side of a mountain in the Topanga Canyon, and I think now he's going to go out and take a sunbath, which I think I'll go to the beach. I want to thank him for the interview, and thank you for listening, and I want to wish everybody tuned in a really nice evening.